From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business. Really, really, all the
right
life.
He doesn't
clean.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
2009 was a year of great change in show business, and 2010 will undoubtedly top it. This week on The Business, it's the Hollywood year to be, with Cynthia Littleton of Variety and John Horn of Los Angeles Times. Stay close, it's The Business from KCRW.
In Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
Yes. 2009 was as topsy-turvy a year as anyone in Hollywood can remember. And it seems 2010 might be even topsier and turvier. Today, we'll make our predictions of the big stories of the coming year. Call it Mega Banter, with our prognosticators, Cynthia Littleton, the deputy editor of Variety, and John Horn, who writes about Hollywood for the Los Angeles Times. All right, we're going to gaze fearlessly into our crystal balls. We're going to talk about the year to come. And we're going to start with Comcast, because this is my obsession, but I actually think Comcast is the most likely, unless Disney decides to try and cut ahead in the line, to start rolling out video on demand in a way that is truly going to affect the entire structure of the movie business. Why don't John take it away, John?
I think video on demand is iTunes. I mean, I think it's natural. I think it makes sense. I know there's going to be a lot of obstacles, especially from the theater owners. But I think fundamentally it makes more sense than anything that's come along in a very long time. As bandwidth increases, as people go on satellite dishes, as people have faster internet connections, the idea that you have to wait 3 months after a movie is released theatrically to watch in your home is an antiquity. I mean, I know that movie theaters will continue to exist and people will still flood to event movies like Avatar or, you know, the
fewer
next
movie theaters.
Yeah, probably, but I don't think the movie business is going to go away. But I think the idea, and from the studio's perspective, the terms are much better. You're not splitting your money with a theater. If you're Comcast, you're keeping all the revenues. You're not passing through a distribution entity. I just think everything economically, in terms of how people consume entertainment now, it just makes sense, and its time has come right
now.
I think that the theater owners' lobby is probably at its weakest point in terms of influence with the major studios, in terms of them being able to squawk and the studios, you know, panicking to assuage their concerns. I think you're right, and I think Comcast, being cable guys from Philadelphia, very smart cable guys from Philadelphia, are not going to be as susceptible to the, oh my God, you're violating sacred tenets of the industry if you collapse these windows. And let's not forget, Comcast really was the pioneer in on-demand viewing of HBO, of Showtime. They really cajoled a lot of other programmers to make shows available on an on-demand basis, and not even for like $1.99 a download, but just as an add-on so that cable subscribers would say, hey, this is really cool. If I miss it at the appointed time, I can go pick this episode out of any lineup. It was kind of like an early version of Hulu, which makes, you know, a lot of programming available to people whenever they feel like watching it. And so I think you're right. I think your faith in Comcast is borne out by their history.
But I also think, Kim, it's going to be tiered pricing. I mean, you can watch a video on demand now of some crummy independent film for a couple of bucks. But if you want to watch the latest, you know, pay-per-view Ultimate Fighting Championship, you're going to pay $30.
So that good stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. So if it's, you know, Iron Man 2 and it's a pay-per-view event, you're going to pay a lot more for that. And the studios are going to love that, because the bigger the investment, the bigger the return is going to be on the show.
I think the theater owners are weak, but they're looking for a studio to punish now. They're looking for a studio to say, we're not colluding, but we all somehow agree that we should not run your movie. Because Universal would seem to me to be the studio they would be most likely to focus on. Because
they're not going to run the Green Zone?
Exactly. Well, Universal will need to have the movies out there to get something out of this weak year ahead.
Is where the consolidation of the companies is working to their advantage, because there are fewer suppliers of movies. movies to the exhibitors. I think the studios have much more clout than they have. And listen, the theater owners are going to throw a huge fight, but I don't think the theatrical business is going to go away. I just think it's going to be radically changed.
Yeah, it'll be hurt.
Yeah. And you have to remember, too, we're not just talking about video on demand. 3D TV is, you know, a year or two away. So the very things that you go to a movie theater for, you've already got your surround sound probably. You may have your plasma TV in your living room. When 3D TV comes, and I've seen some early demos, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Then it's like, why do I need to go to a theater?
Everybody's talking about the window of exhibition for the theater versus going on video on demand versus...
In other words, you let the movie run out in the theater so that you sell as many tickets as you can, and then you offer
it. And then it comes on DVD, mm-hmm. and then you wait a few more weeks, and it comes on... I think you're going to see some collapsing of that, so you don't have to wait as long to get to the VOD stage where you're at home and you push a button and you get it. There's a lot of talk about... Will a movie go day and date into theaters and available at a premium $25 on VOD? I don't think we'll see that in 2010. I don't think anybody has quite that much.
I disagree. I think we will by the end of the year.
Well, a chairman of one of the studios that's been sort of considered a potentially aggressive studio in all of this said to me, he thinks it's a little bit with Comcast like Obama and Guantanamo. Like when you're running, you say, I'm going to close that. And then when you finally actually own the company and the studio is yours, you say, you know, it's a little more complicated. And he thinks that they'll pull back and they won't go day and date with theatrical release, at least not right away. So I kind of tend to agree, but I guess, John, you disagree.
Like any business, Hollywood wants to maximize revenues and lower costs. And you minimize costs by not having a separate marketing campaign for the theatrical release, then for the home video release, and then maybe for the pay TV. You put that all together.
The funny thing about Comcast is that the announcement of the 51% takeover came almost 10 years to the day that AOL and Time Warner announced their merger. And we all know how well that worked out. But in this case, they're talking about a lot of the same things. We're going to make product available to consumers in the broadband space. We're going to do all these things. But with Comcast, you have a lot of really hard assets underlying that business. You have USA Network. You have Sci-Fi. You have a lot of solid money-making ventures, and you have, you know, the top cable company that by all accounts is pretty well run and throws off a lot of cash flow. So you have, it's like 10 years later, is
and
the industry
is more
ready
prepared. Right.
for this. So that'll be the fascinating thing to watch this year.
So we've talked about the movie business and how there's going to be a changing model and new technology will affect the model. What about broadcast versus cable and even Hulu? How is that going to shake itself out?
I think the big thing to watch for the television business, broadcast and cable, is how they harness the growing amount of viewing that is taking place online on Hulu. Comcast is pushing a thing that they're calling, that they've come up with the unfortunate name of Fancast Xfinity.
Yeah, that just trips off the tongue,
doesn't it? That's going to need a rethink, but it's basically Hulu for cable if you're a cable subscriber and you can prove that you get a password to use it. What the industry really needs with that is they need for all of that viewing that's going on Hulu to be measured by Nielsen, by a company that can count the eyeballs and allow the networks to sell advertising against it. Because right now, a lot of that viewing is basically lost viewing.
You would think they would be able to keep track of that very easily.
It's a whole other show, the politics and the economics of the ratings business. But that's something that the industry is really pushing, the people that own the yardsticks of the ratings that really drive the currency of advertising. And you're going to hear a lot of the networks talking about this three-screen revolution of the three screens of the TV set, the computer, and your cell phone or your mobile device.
Right.
And the big hurdle is to come up with an omnibus rating that will allow them to sell advertising based on the
package
total
together,
number.
Bundled.
But Madison Avenue doesn't take to change well, so there's a big fight coming there too.
If you're just joining us, this is the Hollywood Year to Be with John Horn, who writes about Hollywood for the Los Angeles Times, and Cynthia Littleton, the deputy editor of Variety. Let's talk about a couple of specific TV stories that capture my imagination. I feel confident, and I don't know if you disagree, that Leno will not remain at 10 p.m. once the Comcast NBC Universal deal closes.
I mean, I think if you talk to people at NBC now, there is an acknowledgement that Leno is probably not going to be on the air next season in its current form. But near as I can tell, it will stay on the Monday through Friday 10 o'clock slot at the very least until after the Winter Olympics. And it may well go through the end of this season, which will end in May. But there is kind of an understanding that it was an experiment. It didn't work. You know, it's hurting a lot of key assets.
And then does he go to Fox and help their assets, or what does he do?
That is a good
question.
Can he
go back to 11:35?
Can he go back to 11:35?
Maybe he joins Oprah's new...
And what happens to Conan?
He's back.
Late night at Oprah.
What happens to Conan? What happens to Jimmy Fallon? I mean,
right.
there's a whole domino effect mm-hmm. here. And NBC did a very strict 2-year deal with Leno, so he will get a very big paycheck. No matter what happens.
Yes, we're not having a fundraiser for Jay Leno.
But there is, like I said, inside NBC, there's been tons of rumors that it was going to go down to 3 days a week. It was going to change times.
But you definitely have a lot of people. I mean, the John Wellses of the world, the people who are writing and creating original scripted television, who are rooting for this to happen,
oh, yeah.
rooting for Jay to go away. And because they've lost 5 hours of precious real estate they want back.
If it had worked, it would have been a very bad thing, even worse than it actually is for them. What about Oprah? Is she going to hit the cable world in 2010?
No. If it goes as planned, her cable network will launch in January of 2011.
Well, so we'll feel the rumbling
around this time
next year. We'll talk
about
it again.
I'm sure that her last season of the daytime talk show will be, there'll be a tsunami of publicity. But that, you know, she really does need to hit January of 2011 because this long gestating cable network partnership that she has with Discovery Communications, they've pushed back the launch date several times. And even Oprah, there's got to be a credibility factor there.
Now, John, one thing we know is not going to be on cable this year, but in the 2010, but will be on broadcast television, is the Oscar ceremony. And we have some interesting developments, notably the 10 Best Picture nominees. I will boldly predict that we will not see that again. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, the whole impetus for this was trying to get more popular movies into the Best Picture race. I think the real question is, had there been 5, wouldn't Avatar have made it anyway?
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
And so the extra 5 movies are going to be really good movies. If you follow my logic, it might be Serious Man, it might be Crazy Heart, maybe it's Up, which is a big box office hit. But
Up might make the top 5 anyway, really.
Well, but in any case, the whole move was to try to create a show that was centered around popular movies. And of course, you know this, Kim, the highest rated Oscar ceremony of all time was with what director's film?
Why, it would be James Cameron in Titanic, I believe.
Right. So in some ways, I think we're going to come full circle with Avatar. I mean, not only is it going to be an incredibly popular film for a long time, but it's incredibly well received. So I think it comes in. And so did the 10 film, did that work? I think they're not going to change their mind that quickly. So I don't know that it was a good idea. I think its whole purpose was defeated by the reception of Avatar. But I just don't think they're going to unring that bell.
But does The Hangover get one of the 10 slots?
No.
Bold predictions. I actually think that they will, you know, the studios are not going to support it. It's too expensive to campaign for 10 movies when you know that several of them are really not in contention at all. And I just can't imagine they're going to want to continue this.
Do not tell that to the advertisers of the LA Times. We depend on there for your consideration.
It's really important to have 10. Okay.
I think we should expand it to 20.
For the health and welfare of entertainment journalists.
50. Why not 50?
I hear 75.
And then we also have so many strong animation nominees that you almost wonder whether animation is no longer a reasonable ghetto for, I don't know. We're looking at what, Coraline?
Ponyo, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Princess and the Frog.
And of course
Obviously. No, I absolutely argue that some of the best filmmaking of the last year was done in animation. Some of the most original storytelling. And I've seen, you know, one of the movies from next year, How to Train Your Dragon, which is exceptional. I just think it's great storytelling. You know, we're going to have a new Toy Story movie next year. So, you know, Pixar, can you think of a studio in the history of Hollywood that has had a better track record?
I knew the question.
I think maybe some of those animated movies get in the best picture race, but as a parent, as a kid, I just think it's a wonderful time to be seeing animated movies.
That's for sure. We have some other changes that will affect the industry perhaps in the year ahead. We have some tax incentives in California now. Will we see the Runaway production return to this area, do you think, Cynthia?
Nobody in the industry likes the incentive program that the state came up with. Every everybody who could potentially be taking advantage of it has a beef with the way it was constructed. It was a kind of a hastily constructed bill, and they have so many strings attached that they make it really hard for companies to take advantage of it. So there was a lot more grousing. There's talk that they're going to go back to the drawing board and revive it, but I suspect it will be held up with the kind of general ineptness in our state legislature more so than it will be. But a big question is the whole issue of production incentives in other states is starting to get a rethink.
Yeah,
there'd been this sort
been
of conventional of wisdom that, oh, it's going to bring in all this money, and now some states are kind of crunching the numbers and going, maybe it didn't give us all that much. So
perhaps we have been looted.
If there is a decline in other states offering these huge carrots, then that could be a de facto help.
Now, just running through a sort of laundry list of things that will change, we also are looking – we're going to get a new head at the MPAA. John, is that like the Mission Impossible?
That's
a
hard –
Tom Cruise?
I mean, that's a hard job. I mean, you are – I mean, there are obviously any number of things that you have to deal with. You have to deal with the bread and butter stuff like, you know, ratings and making sure that there is, you know, some sort of economic relief for Hollywood. But you also have to deal with China. I mean, the most populous nation in the world shows 20 foreign language movies a year, and you get about 15% of the theatrical revenue. So the new head of the MPAA is going to have to, you know, untie that Gordian knot, and that's
right.
A huge challenge. I mean, we've talked about Hollywood being a global economy. Here you have the world's most populous nation, and you get, you know, one studio might be lucky if they get two movies in there a year. So I think it's a tough, thankless job, but whoever comes into Dan Glickman's position has a lot of work on his or her plate.
Yes, and Dan Glickman, of course, had a sort of a tough time of it because his constituents are not speaking with one voice the way that it used to be, that Lou Wasserman would click his briefcase shut and everybody knew what this message was going to be, and now it's just not possible.
I completely agree. And what Comcast wants is probably not at all what Sony wants. And what Sony wants may be incredibly different from what Disney wants. So
right.
you have to be a peacemaker, and you have to, you know, push Washington, which doesn't have a lot of money or sympathy for Hollywood, to show sympathy and give some money to the business.
So let's just go quickly through the studios because there's a lot going on with the various studios. What about MGM? That on the brink, Cynthia, what do you think?
I mean, hasn't MGM kind of been over for a long time? it feels like we've been generous and kind of including them back in the club.
I actually haven't. I've ignored them for years.
The thing that won't die.
You don't think Hot Tub Time Machine is going to turn around their fortune? The remake of Red Dawn?
I'm counting on that,
I mean,
yes.
What's amazing about MGM is not only, as you mentioned, that they're still around, they have huge amounts of overhead, a lot of employees. I would argue that if you're looking at the studios and looking for a studio that's going to be sold, I think Summit probably makes more sense than MGM. You get part of Bond and you get The Hobbit and you get a lot
that's
of debt
MGM.
If you buy MGM. You buy Summit, you get a $1 billion franchise in Twilight.
What about Disney under Rich Ross? I think this will be a Cynthia question since you're the one who knows him. John and I are waiting to get to know him because he's been a TV guy and he hasn't been in our orbit so much.
It will be titles and properties that can marshal the Disney machine, which is a very effective, very profitable machine when it gets going and fired up with the right material. The big tentpole Disney titles will be very Disney-esque, very family-friendly things that can really become franchise players. The interesting question will be, what will they do with Miramax? You know, will that be the Scott Rudin? Will that be Scott Rudin's label? How the DreamWorks relationship will work out, how they will market those movies.
I think Rich Ross is going to inherit a really good slate of movies. They've got Prince of Persia, they've got Sorcerer's Apprentice, they have Toy Story 3. I think Disney's going to have a really good year.
We'll be back in a minute with more of the Hollywood Year to Be. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. We'd love to know what you think. Write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Today, it's the Hollywood Year to Be, with Cynthia Littleton of Variety and John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Disney is a good poster child for some of the overall subject of these fancy production deals. And, of course, they've got some of the fanciest with Jerry Bruckheimer, Bob Zemeckis, DreamWorks. Who am I leaving out?
Scott Rudin.
What do you think, John?
I think 2010 is going to be incredibly difficult for producer deals. You know, where the studio is paying you regardless of whether or not you make a movie. They're paying your overhead. They're giving you money to buy books. If you make a movie, you may have a first dollar gross position in that film. I think those deals, with few exceptions, are going to come under incredible pressure in 2010. And I just don't think they're going to be renewed. And they're certainly not going to be renewed at the levels that they have been in the past. I think that's one place the studios are going to look to cut costs. And Disney will not be unlike Sony or Universal in how they're going to start approaching those deals. And if I were, and I'm not, a highly paid movie producer, I would be very nervous about the renegotiation of my term deal.
And in terms of Fox, I think that I would just say it looks kind of stable. They're doing awfully well. But what about Sony? Sony has done well, but could certainly use another Spider-Man.
Yeah, which they won't have for 2010. I think maybe for 2011 they will. I mean, every studio wants to have that kind of franchise. Universal would love to get Bourne going again.
And that's not happening right now.
And it's just, I mean, Sony will be okay, but they certainly need Spider-Man 4. And again, it won't be ready for at least another year.
These movies become so gigantic. And I guess as we look to the year ahead, we're looking at yet another pile of gigantic sequel, action, adventure, noisy things, right?
You'll detect a trend. Iron Man 2, Shrek 4, Sex and the City 2, Harry Potter, was it 7.5? What do we call
count.
It?
Yeah.
Narnia 3, Fockers...
Whatever it is.
Littler Fockers.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Smaller now. They're reproducing.
So definitely the studios are betting not only more money, but they're concentrating their money on pre-awareness titles, as they like to call them. Reimaginings, rethinking, sequels, remakes, those kinds of things. I'm hopeful as a moviegoer that that cycle, and maybe some of these movies will be really good, that cycle will be relatively short. And that there will be blindsides and hangovers and ups, original movies that do incredibly well, and that the studios will start rethinking not making those kinds of movies.
And with the exception of Up, these are relatively less expensive, much less expensive, and then they pay off huge.
Yes, but they don't grow on trees. I mean, Paramount launched a low-budget film division trying in some ways to clone the success
yes,
of Paranormal
think?
Activity. I just think it's, I mean, all
yeah.
I can say is Blair Witch 2. I think it's very hard to make those movies. And I think it's a great idea if you're going to go out and give, you know, J.J. Abrams' assistant $75,000 and say, go make a movie, maybe he or she can make a really cool movie. I just think they're hard. And this is what film festivals are bombarded with, hundreds if not thousands of these movies every year.
And you've never heard of almost
And maybe 10 of them are mm-hmm. distributed in a meaningful way theatrically.
And then even fewer do any kind of business.
But they'll be throwing away money in smaller increments at least.
Exactly. So.
And of course, Viacom, you know, Paramount's parent company, you have a very old chairman who denies that he is in fact mortal. But it does feel to me as though there is a lot of uncertainty hanging over that. You know, I know they will have had a very strong fourth quarter, but it feels a little bit tricked up. And I don't know that they are strong going forward.
Well, and this is a studio that didn't have enough money. Well, they can give you whatever excuse they want to release Shutter Island.
Right.
You know, Martin Scorsese directed Leonardo DiCaprio
movie.
Well,
certainly whether they had the money or not, they weren't intending to spend it and screw up their fourth quarter numbers.
Exactly. So, I mean, when you're taking movies like that off of your schedule, which may or may not have been an awards contender, I just think that's a sign that there are greater problems there.
We haven't talked about Warner Brothers, but Warner certainly seems to be the most profitable studio, and they just keep it coming, right?
No, I mean, they had The Hangover, they had Blindside, they've got a, you know, Harry Potter movie in 2010. I mean, Warner Brothers did exceptionally well this year as they had great marketing. I mean, those movies played well because audiences responded to them, but I would say the campaigns for both those films were phenomenal.
And to what degree is social networking going to become, I mean, some people argue that it's not, that all of this stuff is really just amplifies plain old-fashioned word of mouth, and some people feel it's transformed the industry. So if you believe that it's transformed the industry, do you think that that becomes even more so in 2010?
I think social networking has a great benefit to filmmaking, and that is it raises the bar of how good the movies have to be. Because if a movie is bad and people don't like it, it'll be dead by Friday at midnight. And I think that forces studios, now whether or not they're able to do it is a different question, but it forces studios to actually execute. You know, that marketability.
If they knew how to do it, of course. They would.
But, you know, they've always been able to get away with, you know, pre-awareness titles. Marketability has always trumped playability, and I think those tables have turned. And I think for anybody who cares about movies, that's a great development.
What do you think?
I think for television, social networking and the blogosphere and all that buzz is kind of interesting. I think networks have definitely become aware that it can magnify what is still a very small core. I mean, you can find almost any show will have some hardcore cadre of people that will declare that this is the best show ever and should be saved. And a few years ago when all this was still relatively new, there was a sense, the Jericho effect. Oh my God, we've got to give this another shot. And it's still not going to, no matter how much email, how much traffic is generated, it's still not going to generate the numbers for a mainstream success. I think with social networking, you're going to see more entrepreneurs like Michael Eisner, people who are putting money into what are called web serials or original programming that is meant for the internet to run in serial or series-like fashion, can be produced cheaply and distributed and promoted heavily on the MySpaces and the Facebooks. And it'll be interesting to see if anything in that realm really clicks.
You think those can catch on? I always feel like people just don't seem to care about those.
It remains to be seen if somebody can really come up with something that will really click and become a property that then does catch on.
And I think the studios are going to try to use social networking as more of a marketing tool because Paramount had great success with it on Paranormal Activity. But I just don't think they're adept at doing that. I think there's such a great BS detector within social networking that if something smells inauthentic, it will be rejected.
It seems to be very effective in sort of deepening a connection between viewers and
But you cannot create a connection where none exists. That's what I'm just saying. It can amplify something
that works. No, you can't fabricate a connection,
Absolutely.
But you can amplify maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let me ask you to come up with a tweet. I'm not going to actually count the characters, though, because I'm not that good. But what would your tweet be? We'll start with Cynthia of 2010.
I would like to be a fly on the wall in Steve Burke's office, who is the number two at Comcast, who's going to be running NBC Universal, because I think that is going to be a leading edge company going forward in all of the things that we've been talking about.
What about you, John? You got a tweet for me.
My tweet is going to be, hope to see you online. I just think the... And don't worry, my wife, that's not some come on to somebody else. I think the real issue and the real future of Hollywood is going to be through video on demand. And I think the studios are going to put a greater emphasis on delivering movies in non-traditional ways. So I think all of this, the social networking, digital distribution, movie theaters will still exist and they'll still do well. But I just think there's a totally new model of distribution around the corner. And people who are sticking their head in the sand are going to be surprised to see it take off. It may not be 2010, maybe it's 2011, but it's coming.
That was really long tweets, both of you. So my tweet, my totally self-serving tweet is, change coming. Keep listening to the show. Cynthia Littleton is deputy editor of Variety, and John Horn writes about Hollywood for the Los Angeles Times. Thank both of you very much.
See you in 2010.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is our associate producer. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.